Welcome to another edition of Perspectives from Rothschild & Co. My name is Laura Kündlen, and for today's edition, I'm joined by Melanie Espy, Director of the Rothschild Archive. So welcome to Zurich, Melanie.
Thank you very much, Laura.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you join us today, both on the podcast and here in the office. And it's funny, really, because whenever I come to the London office, one of my first visits is invariably the archive. So it feels particularly special to have you reciprocate the visit today.
I'm delighted. And that's great news. And that's a good advertisement for when people come to London. I think everybody should follow that.
And actually, that's what we're going to talk about today, the archive.
Yes.
So for our listeners who may not have had the chance, like myself, to visit the London office or are less acquainted with the archive, could you share with us the story behind the founding of it and how it evolved over time?
Of course. In many ways, archives have existed as long as the business or the individual with which they're connected has existed. But the important thing is to create the proper structure to hold them and to manage them and to take care of them. We are this year, 2024, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the creation of the Rothschild Archive Trust, which is an important occasion for anybody. 25 is a great reason for celebration. And the Rothschild Archive Trust was created in 1999 by the then chairman of the London branch of the business of N.M. Rothschild & Sons, Sir Evelyn de Rothschild, who sadly died in 2022. Sir Evelyn and his father, Anthony, had loved the family history. They were very proud of their history, quite rightly. And in 1995, I think something happened in London that maybe made Sir Evelyn rethink how the archives were held. And that is that the Baring Brothers business collapsed. The archives of Baring Brothers were part of the asset that was sold to ING for £1. The archives are in really good condition. They're well looked after. But the Baring family lost that immediate connection with their history. And I think there was something in the back of Sir Evelyn's mind that told him, no matter how much I love the archives and I'm dedicated to keeping the archives of N.M. Rothschild & Sons, I need to take steps to prevent anything terrible happening to our shared family history. And he created this trust. The trust was initially to look after the records of N.M. Rothschild & Sons. The trustees were a mixture of family members and independent advisors. But as soon as the trust was created, there was a sort of unintended consequence, I think, in that different branches of the Rothschild family began to consider us to be a kind of family attic. And they began to donate and deposit with us collections relating to their family branch. This was phenomenal, really exciting, really important. All of our spare storage space that we'd planned for future growth almost immediately was eaten up by these tremendous gifts. And the gifts that the family have made have enabled us to tell a much broader story of the development of the Rothschild family altogether, not just the business, but also their philanthropic interests, their artistic interests. Anything that they do is part of our story. And we can tell a richer story to our visitors, to our researchers, because the Rothschild Archive is an educational charity. So we welcome into our reading room, which you visited, researchers from all over the world who share with us their expertise about the material that they're looking after.
And when did you join them?
I had joined the archive before the trust was created. Okay. So 2024 is an important anniversary for me also. It's my 30th year working with the archives.
So time for a big celebration.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So as the director of the archive, how do you preserve and showcase the rich history and also the legacy of the Rothschild family?
We've been incredibly fortunate in that so many branches of the family have donated material to us. So we have this huge widespread responsibility to physically care for material. Material that's given to us is usually in pretty good condition, but we have to make sure that we've got the right temperature and the right relative humidity, really professional standard qualities that we use to look after this collection. But archives are about people. Archives tell the story of the people who created them. And so showcasing them is to showcase those histories, those personal stories. So archives, we believe, are not just pieces of paper. Archives are about people. So if we talk to people about the material they give to us, they tell us their stories, and we can help them interpret their history for their succeeding generations, but also to help the business generally and the wider family group understand its history. Showcasing it for us is actually, we're in one of the best positions of any archive I know, because as you know, when you come to London, mm-hmm. you can hardly miss the archive when you arrive at New Court. It's there right by the front door.
Not everyone dares to enter, though.
True, yes. We're actually not as bad as we seem, actually. We seem quite stricter, perhaps. But to have that sense of confidence, for a business to have that sense of confidence in displaying its archive, its reading room, right at the point of entry. My colleagues who work in other business archives tell me that they are seized with archive envy when they see how we are looked after. But it's not just because of us, it's because of that history. So incorporating elements of the past, using history in a contemporary way, mm-hmm. is to make the archives, make the past feel always relevant.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at websites that all of the businesses, all the different business branches use, they use a version of Five Arrows. It's not just something that marketing teams have designed.
Mm-hmm.
The Five Arrows represent the five brothers who were the sons of the founder of the business in Frankfurt in the 18th century. And that was the symbol that they chose to represent themselves. And the message of those five arrows is that you're stronger together than if you're just in business on your own. One arrow can be broken. A bundle of five arrows can't be broken. There's strength in unity. And so even those small symbols that continue year after year, decade after decade, century after century, mm-hmm. even, that's telling the story, that's showcasing that past, when that past was the present for the people who created the symbols and the icons.
That's truly connecting the past with the present.
Very much so, yes.
You already said that archives are about families and individuals. Can you share any interesting anecdotes about the family's journey that shows their resilience and also long-term perspective?
I'd give you two examples. The first, an Anglo-French pair of examples. So the first one is a British example, an English example. And that is somebody I've mentioned already, Anthony de Rothschild,
mm-hmm.
who was the father of Sir Evelyn de Rothschild. He loved the family history and loved archives. His daughter told me that he would hurry everyone up at dinner so that he could go back down to the muniment room and look at the letters again and pore over the letters. But Anthony is somebody who could have given up. He was a war hero in the First World War. When he came out of service, he came back into the partnership in London. The three senior partners of the business had died of old age during the First World War. His own brother had been killed in the war. So he had one brother with him and a cousin who were partners in the hardest possible times, mm-hmm. post-war recovery, going through the 20s and 30s with financial crises, following financial crises, mm-hmm. then the Second World War, and then the period of post-war recovery. He could not be entrepreneurial. How can you in that period of time? But what he did was hold on. He had faith in that sense of the long term, which Meyer Amschel Rothschild, the founder of the business, was thinking of when he created the first partnership agreement. Mm-hmm. Stay together, bring the next generations of the family into the business, and together you can go forward. Anthony couldn't do that. He just held on. And so Evelyn was always very fond of his father's memory. He really appreciated everything his father had done. And just before he died, he was able to see a memoir of his father that the business had promoted and sponsored, that was written by a really eminent author on city history and British social history. And this story of Anthony brought out the fact that, as he said in his own words, "I'm a perpetual optimist." You have to be an optimist. Had he not had that sense of optimism in the period between 1918 and the late 1950s, what was there to achieve except holding on and having the faith that better times would come and that the next generation could pick up the reins and take the business forward? And the book I highly recommend the book, banker and philanthropist, a portrait of Anthony de Rothschild, which brings out all the strengths that we want to talk about today, about people, bankers who are good neighbours, they're good people. He never stopped supporting all the charities that he had done personally. He helped create new ones during the 30s and the 40s. At Newcourt, he chaired something called the Central British Fund, which was helping German Jews to escape. So that central point of a physical business house being so much intertwined with rescuing a whole generation of European Jewry, that was what happened. That's our history too. And we can tell that story through the archives. So that's one aspect of it. That's Anthony holding on. And then that's other sense of faith in the future. Is this almost, well, really a catastrophe that took place in Paris when the French bank was nationalised in 1982. Again, what do you do? Your business is taken from you. The business premises that you've occupied as a family business since the 19th century, that's gone, but you have your name. And that's a precious thing. And the David de Rothschild and his cousin Eric de Rothschild restarted that business. You could have given up, I suppose. Again, you could have stopped and decided not to do it any longer. But that confidence in your own ability, your sense of partnership with other businesses and with your clients carries you forward. And that was just over 40 years ago that the business was nationalised. And look where we are today. That's quite a story, really.
It is.
Quite a story to tell for the future.
And I think we just moved into new office premises as well.
Yes.
So how do you think the values upheld by the family can inspire and guide businesses and leaders also in today's ever-changing world?
I think because archives tell the truth. Archives are evidence. They're not... I say this some little bit flippantly sometimes to visitors when I show them pieces of paper which record people's impression of the ethics of the business and the ethics of the family, the values of the family. And I say this wasn't just developed by a marketing focus group because it sounds the right thing to say. This is actually what people felt of the business. We have a really fantastic letter from S.G. Warburg written to Anthony de Rothschild when Warburg had just completed an internship at Newcourt in London. And he talks about the fine tradition of Newcourt, which combines business with humanity without neglecting either. Now, if that's not a message to give to business leaders, to political leaders and to the wider world about how you continue to succeed in business and have the respect of your peers, I don't know what is, but it is a truth. It's something that he felt when he spent time at Newcourt. So that's, to me, that's priceless.
You showed the letter to me. It's on display in the archive, right?
Yes,
I remember that one. So you already mentioned that this year marks the 25th anniversary of the archive. What milestones have characterized this journey and how does it reflect the enduring legacy of the family?
We have, as I said, grown hugely. The creation of the trust enabled us also to be slightly independent, even though we represent every branch of the family. There's a value in that independence in that we can form partnerships with academic institutions and help generate more research, which in turn helps us to understand better our own collection. So those milestones have been a really important project that looked at Jewish philanthropy and social development in Europe, using the Rothschilds as the case study. And this seemed to have just found the zeitgeist, really. Lots of other interesting projects in philanthropy have developed. And I like to think that we were the first, of course, and that we generated all that interest. But it was really the right moment for us to have generated that project and to have found academic partners to work with us. So that, for me, is a highlight because I'm still talking about that today. That was a project in 2003, and I'm still talking about that today. I think it helps our many Rothschild family and business foundations to understand the genesis of their creation and why they were created at certain times by certain members of the Rothschild family. If you understand your history, you understand your present
That's
and you
true.
can plan for your future. So I'm really proud of that project. I think it was an outstanding one. And I was just thinking about the amount of material that we've acquired since I started working at the archive. And we register everything that comes into the archive, whether it's one item or whether it's two suitcases of photographs from the First World War that came
You never know
together.
what's in there,
You never know
right?
what's in there. It's so exciting. Every day is so exciting.
Christmas
And
every
it is,
day.
yes, exactly. And I remembered one thing that was that, so everything gets a number.
Yes.
We started obviously many, many years ago with number one, and our 3,000th acquisition was a gift from a hospital in London, the Evelina London Hospital. And the Evelina London Hospital was named after Evelina de Rothschild. It was a hospital created in the 1860s by her widower, Ferdinand de Rothschild, because Evelina and her child had died in childbirth. Ferdinand, from one of the wealthiest families in the world, could not prevent that. For all his wealth, his wife died. And but he wanted to do something that would help prevent that happening to other families in his grief. And he created the Evelina Hospital for Children. Over time, different branches of the family have served as president or treasurer of the hospital. When the hospital moved to new premises in around about 2005, different branches of the London family supported it, supported the purchase of scanning machines and so on. And Sir Evelyn served on the board that was trying to raise funds for an air ambulance specifically for children, because the Evelina is a centre of excellence and children are brought from all over the southeast of England. And his foundation made a significant donation to the Evelina to fund nursing scholarships. This is to help the long term of the hospital, to enable nurses to see a future career path for themselves in whatever their specific area of interest is. And this has been a great chance for the archive and the business in London to get to know the Evelina better. Some of us volunteer at Christmas to decorate the hospital. We have our Christmas giving tree. The last 2 years has been to provide gifts for the children who have to stay in hospital over Christmas. Some of my colleagues offer pro bono advice for the nurses and the staff. Their skills are things that they do in their sleep, spreadsheets and so on. That's not necessarily the skill set of a nurse, but you need to know how to do that if you're planning your projects to help your own career. And it's given the archive, I feel, has given that a real sense of purpose that it's living. We can explain to the hospital what its history is. And so what I mentioned was our 3,000th acquisition was the badge that each of the nursing scholars is given when they achieve their scholarship, when they're awarded the scholarship. And it's based on a watercolour of Evelina herself that we have in the archive. And the hospital very kindly gave us a copy of this badge for the archive. And it was just a lovely thing to have that.
And also, what a beautiful story to come out of such a tragedy.
Exactly.
So, looking ahead, what do you envision for the future of the Rothschild Archive, and how do you plan to continue celebrating and honoring the family's heritage?
Crystal ball time. Crystal ball time. When the archive, as it will, celebrates its 50th anniversary, I won't be here, that's a certainty. But what's fantastic about working in an archive is that you develop relationships. So we have legacy plans for our team, for what we want to do. We make contacts constantly with people at different levels of the business in different areas so that they're not forgetting us. It's important that you maintain your friends, but that you also make new ones in successive generations. So that's going to be important for us. A key thing for thinking about the future of archives is the digital
Of
age.
course.
And you have seen beautiful things when you visited the archive. I'm not so sure how beautiful things will be. That's my crystal ball fails me at that point. I can't see how that will be attractive, but the digital record is the record of what we're doing now. And what I always say to people is that archives are not just about the past, as I say, they're about now. And today, the businesses are creating history. Whatever we do, we're creating history. And I want to make sure that that's reflected in the archives of the future. as we said, parties spring to mind when you think about anniversary. So I also want to reach out to the younger members of the Rothschild family so that they can consider the Rothschild archive to be their resource as well.
And their attic. Yes,
and their family attic. Yes, their combined family attic, which maybe the rafters are groaning a little bit under the weight of it. But it's important that they feel attached to their history. And that maybe in the fullness of time, they can consider whatever they've done, that they will allow us to represent that in the archive too, and to tell a much, much broader story, depending on what they've been able to create. I think maybe you've had in Switzerland, you had a visit by David Mayard Rothschild, the eco-warrior. Mm-hmm. So we have connections with him, and we want to make sure that we collect his stories, his experiences as well.
So coming back to what you said at the beginning, always stronger together and as
yes.
a team.
Yes.
So many thanks for sharing these fascinating insights with us today, Melanie. And I'm already very much looking forward to my next London visit.
Good. Anytime, Laura.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Please note, this audio content is produced by Rothschild & Co. for information purposes only, and any reliance on the information provided in it is done at your own risk. This content should only be used or reproduced with the express written permission of Rothschild & Co. The podcast is not provided as a solicitation, recommendation, or invitation to buy or sell any security, fund, or any other banking or investment product. Nothing in this podcast constitutes advice of any sort, and no responsibility is accepted in relation to the fairness or accuracy of it. The value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, and you may not recover the amount of your original investment. Past performance should not be taken as a guide to future performance.